What's up, Noel Nation? It's the guys from Plant the Spear. I'm Jesse. That's Michael. And we have a lot to talk about today, Michael. We have quarterback one announcements. We have a section that I can only call What the Hell, Mike Norvell, that kind of looks into how we got to this mess that we're in anyway. We also have the NFL draft to talk about, and the round ball sports are doing some things that are worth mentioning at the end of the show. So, man, looking forward to this one. It's going to be a little bit more of maybe one of our old school shows, right? We got a lot of numbers to dig into. We're going to kind of make a lot of sense, a lot of analytics and stuff like that. But we're going to make it easy for everyone to understand. It's going to be a great show by the time it's all said and done with. But, Michael, man, I don't know that I can say I'm excited about this one because there's a little bit of a cloud that hangs over, but it really does build on to what we talked about in the last episode. Will FSU ever return to glory? I recommend that you go back and watch that. You can do it after this one. This is just going to kind of build onto that. So lots to talk about, man, on today's show.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of follows the theme that we've been kind of taking this summer is like a expose into Florida State football, just kind of looking at just some different angles of how we got here and why we're in this predicament now and what's to come in the future, or what we hope to see, what we think will happen. And so today's episode is kind of going to do a little bit more of that, to rip even more the curtains open so you can see behind the scenes of just some of the stuff that has led us to why we're here and maybe how we get out of it.
Yeah, and I think that's a great distinction to make, right? Because right now, getting into the minutia of spring football, and of course, we're going to talk about Ashton Daniels being named quarterback and all that stuff. We're going to talk about all that, but there's just not enough coming out right now. And honestly, we're like you guys who are watching this too. I don't believe anything I hear right now. Nothing is going to be logged into the I believe it, you know, memory file until I see it against New Mexico State and then SMU. And even then I'll be sketchy because, you know, we started pretty hot last year things fell off a cliff. So we're going to talk, you know, this is why, like you said, we're kind of shifting to a different little mythology of our show topics here. So we're just trying to do some of that stuff. So hopefully it's stuff that you guys are enjoying. So Michael, we're going to dive in. Obviously you have the Ashton Daniels news being named quarterback one. Now, one thing I do want to touch on real quick, just before we jump into this episode and all of the content, obviously a large portion of our listener base is based out of North Florida and South Georgia, who, as we know right now, are going through some pretty tough times with these wildfires. I just wanted to bring this up to say that our prayers are with you guys, because this is something that is hitting so close to home for me. Like, this is happening literally in the county that I grew up in. I graduated high school from. I have family who are under, you know, mandatory evacuations that may or may not have a house come Monday because of these things. The community of my friends that live there and stuff, they've been behind us since Plant the Spear started day one. So to all of you in the Brantley area, in that Southeast Georgia, North Florida area, because there's like 10 of them going on right now, man. I just want to say, for me personally, Michael, I'm sure as well, that we're just praying for you guys, man, because this is devastating stuff to see. And, you know, PTS is a family, man. We love you guys. We're hurting for you guys, and we're praying for you guys through these just devastating wildfires that they're having. It's insane to see this stuff happening in a community, you know, that hits home.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. And you don't ever want to see this. As we kind of talked in the pre-show, you know, I lived in California, and you kind of become numb to the wildfires because it's happening pretty much almost every other month, so to speak. But to see it happen in the southern part of the United States, especially in that Georgia area, North Florida area, man, you got friends, you got family there, you got people you know. Of course, our PTS family that's all down there as well. And so we just want you guys to know, hey, we're lifting you up in prayer. This is not one of those, like, we pray for you and we never do. We're actually doing that right now. I know Jesse's been watching that just with a close eye there as well, too. And so we just hope that you guys get to safety, man. If they tell you to evacuate, just do it. Listen, your life is more precious than your stuff. You can replace stuff. You can't replace life. So get to safety. You got insurance, hopefully. And if you don't, you know, there are government programs out there that can help. But, man, just we're covering you guys in prayer. You know, let us know. Keep us up to date with how everything's going.
Yeah, definitely appreciate you saying that, man. I mean, like I said, it's hard when it hits close to home and it's people that you know that are affected. And again, I know a lot of our listener base is out of that Southeast Georgia region. So shout out to all my Brantley people and everybody there. We're praying for you guys. Now, there's no easy way to transition into this, but let's talk about the decision to name Ashton Daniels quarterback one. Now, this was something that, you know, I have mixed feelings on this, right? I kind of have two paths that I walk when I hear about this. On the one hand, you know, we're not going to spend a lot of time on this because we've talked about the quarterback competition. We said initially neither one of us really thought this was a true competition. Mm-hmm. We thought it was kind of really to keep Kevin Sperry engaged, and we'll see. And Ashton Daniels started camp pretty good, and then he just failed to separate himself. So I think it became a true competition, whereas to begin with, I didn't think it really was. It turns out that, you know, for whatever it was or was in camp, Ashton Daniels does win the QB1 job. So I'm not surprised by that in any way, shape, or form. That's not why we're not going to dive super deep into this. The only interesting things for me are the timing and the other X factor, right? Mm-hmm. So obviously this came out after spring camp. So they felt good enough about Ashton Daniels to name him the QB1. And this is where I have mixed feelings, right? On the one hand, and I've seen some commenters say this when we talked about quarterback position in the last episode, is there's not a whole lot of sense in announcing this publicly right now, right? There's no point in showing your hand when you don't have to. With that being said, I also feel like neither one of these quarterbacks are good enough to split reps in the summer and the fall and get where you want to be, right? Mm-hmm. So while I say that about you had really no point in announcing this publicly, maybe you could have just started giving Ashton Daniels quarterback one reps and just kept it close to the vest. Maybe that's the way you should have played it. I also think I said in an article that I wrote about the competition for our website, I think you need to name a starter now, because that guy, whoever, whether it was Kevin Sperry, whether it was Ashton Daniels, they need all the reps they can get, because neither yep. one has shown to be good enough that, you know, like Carson Beck, right? At Miami last year, guys coming off an injury, missed a spring. Doesn't matter. The guy started right. like 20 something games at a high level. This is not that. And so you needed these guys to get reps. So that's the only thing that I kind of have mixed feelings on this. Malachi Marshall is the X factor that I'm talking about. How does that factor in? You know, you were not certain on who was going to be your quarterback one. Now you're inserting another guy into the mix who may be the best of all three of them. And you kind of decide the competition before he even gets into camp, into fall camp. That's the things that I kind of scratch my head on why they did it the way they did it. But yeah. Again, I think the whoever's quarterback one needs all the reps they can get. And I think it's just more, it's kind of funny. And this is the last thing I'll say, I'll throw it to you, but it's kind of funny how you look at the reaction to this, right? This was 0% surprising. Even when they announced it was a quarterback competition, I did not.
Okay.
We had said maybe Kevin Sperry's the guy, but yep. my money was always going to be on Ashton Daniels starting against New Mexico State, because the way the schedule was so front-loaded, you got to beat SMU. You got to go on the road to Alabama. You got Louisville and Miami coming up early in the season. You yep. don't really have time in a crucial season to let Kevin Sperry feel it out, like if he had three or four easy games up front. So I always thought he was going to be the starter there, Ashton Daniels. But the reaction has been kind of funny, because mm-hmm. it's not a surprise that he won the job. He was brought here to be the starter, but then correct. A lot of people are now like, oh my God, the world is over. It's like, yep. buddy, the sky was already falling. There's no reason to overreact for this now. Right. I just think it further gives the apathy factor fuel to the fire, right? The fact yep. that now we're 3 years going into a quarterback situation where a program that has not shown the ability to sign, develop, or fix, quote unquote, broken quarterbacks is now taking their third broken quarterback in a row and saying, well, maybe this time will be different. Well, you know what, man? Most of the time when you say this time is going to be different, it's not. And so I think that's kind of the shadow that hangs over this announcement. But again, man, it doesn't come as a surprise. I just think the timing of it is the most interesting. And I can see both sides of that argument. I think he needs to get reps now. I also think maybe you could have waited to announce this till fall camp.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Listen, the thing I'll say about this is super simple and quick. What do I say, Jesse, all the time about how if you leave a gap in the story, what will people do?
They'll write their own narrative.
They'll write their own narrative. And you came out of camp and you didn't name a starter. And I think the noise got really loud. It did. I mean, we saw it. We heard it ourselves.
Yeah.
The noise got loud. Like, what a freak are we doing? We don't have a starting QB. So we spent all this money on Ashton Daniels just so Sperry, and we can't even determine. So we don't have one. And I think Mike Norvell and staff went back and said, okay, let's just go ahead and put this to bed.
Yeah.
We're going to go ahead and name a QB. We're going to name the QB we already knew we were already going
to
name.
Yeah, because the right? narrative had become that people were writing, to your point, is that, and I wrote this narrative too, because this is how I took it, was, okay, we have a redshirt senior who can't separate himself from a redshirt freshman. So the story's it's not a good story that the people are writing.
It's a bad story. Here we go again with a bad QB eval, a bad roster management, all like that stuff. And so I think that the coaching staff heard the noise. Maybe somebody said, hey, let's just go ahead and name him. We already know he's going to be the guy. Let's not wait. And there's this whole notion about, oh, or maybe they were waiting for Sperry to keep him engaged. There's no more spring transfer portal, so it doesn't matter. So you should have named him anyway. So this was just another mistake that's been compounded on 1,000 other mistakes, but I'm glad they did it. Now we know. Let's move on.
Just get the reps and let's get them moving.
Yeah.
So we just wanted to touch on that because it is a rather big announcement that's going to carry us into the season. And again, man, for every little bit that we poo-poo on Ashton Daniels, like, I really do hope he surprises all of us. I really do hope this time is different because it's good for our football program, and I just want to win games. So, you know, best of luck to Ashton Daniels as he leads the offense through however many games that ends up being. But the next thing we're going to talk about here is the segment that I could really only title What the Hell, Mike Norvell, because it just kind of shows how we got here, right? And this is a piece that we're going to talk about released by David Hale. Most of you probably have heard of him. He's an ESPN writer who covers the ACC pretty much exclusively. And he wrote an article on his Substack, which basically he was getting prepped for their all ACC show and talking about Florida State. And he just dived into a bunch of numbers and kind of basically how we got here, right? And so we're going to dive into that today. That's going to be the crux of the show. And then we're also going to follow it up with some NFL draft talk that I started putting together notes on. And I'm like, man, this really ties into what he's talking about and reinforces it. So that's what we're going to cover next. Now, Michael, before we get too long-winded on this section, I do quickly want to bring you a word from today's sponsor, and that is Alumni Hall FSU. Look, these guys got elite FSU gear, whether it be baseball, softball, basketball. You know, Luke Laux is out here recruiting his butt off. Buy some basketball gear and support that program, right? So make sure you check those guys out. 1415 Timberlane Road in Tallahassee is the location, or you can shop online at alumnihall.com. Navigate over to the FSU page. They got free shipping over $99, Alumni Hall Pass Rewards. You can save 10% with code SPEAR. So there's a ton of reason to go over there and shop there besides just great Noel gear. So make sure you check them out. That's Alumni Hall FSU. Appreciate you guys supporting those and for them rocking with us for so many years. Now, Michael, let's talk about this article, right? And basically, I'll set it up for you. So pretty much what he talks about is let's try and unpack what happened to Florida State and how we got here. And he's pretty much saying that, you know, the crux of the problem is we know it's been recruiting has been at the foundation of everything. Now, if you're a Florida State fan, if you've listened to the show for any amount of time, you already knew that. That's not news to you. We already know that recruiting and development has been the biggest crack in the foundation here that has led to the results that we're seeing since Mike Norvell arrived. But he just brings up some really interesting points. And one of them is quarterback, which we just talked about, is kind of another thing that's following a trend of how we got here. And then he also talks about the amount of blue chip players that they've had that just have amounted to nothing. And that is one of the main points. These are the two main points that we're going to focus on today. And so we're going to start with quarterback, right?
Okay.
And so he points out that it's basically a quarterback that's been a black hole since Jameis Winston left.
Yeah.
And I mean, outside, right, outside of Jordan Travis. But again, we're talking about high school recruits here. We're not talking about transfers.
Right.
Because the issues have fallen on the back of recruiting. We know Mike Norvell has had some misses in the transfer portal too. We're aware of that. But he's done better in the transfer portal world than he has recruiting, high school recruiting. So when you look at, you know, he says, I'm not going to rehash Willie and I'm not going to rehash Jimbo's time. But one thing that I think it is worth pointing out, and I'll throw it back to you because you had brought up some good points on this, was one, things that compound this problem, right? Towards the end of the Jimbo era, the quarterback recruiting and development had started to wane.
Yeah.
Willie did not sign a quarterback in 18 and 19. Nope. So also, Mike did not sign one in 2021. So from 2018 to 2021, three of those years, you didn't sign a quarterback. So right. To me, that further compounds the problem when you start missing. You have less things in the cupboard to work out. You know, we were talking about this, and I'll throw it back to you, but we were talking about this before the show about Jimbo, right? Jimbo had a lot of busts too. Everyone acts like he was the quarterback whisperer because of what he did with Jameis Winston and all that stuff. And he had a lot of busts too. But the difference is Jimbo could stack talent so deep that it didn't matter if six of your quarterbacks, if three of them didn't work out. Correct. The problem is Mike Norvell has not been able to do that yet. He has not stacked talent deep enough or developed well enough that if one or two misses happen, you're screwed. Correct. You are in trouble. And, you know, like I always like to use this example, Warren Buffett has a great quote. You find out who's swimming naked when the tide goes down, right? And low tide. We've been swimming naked for quite a while, buddy. That's for sure. So it's just one of those where like one or two little misses and you find out how the poor recruiting has left you standing there in a bad situation.
Yeah.
And so, you know, obviously he goes through and he lists the quarterbacks since 2020 through 2026. Some of these guys that are later in the cycle, like a Jaden O'Neal and a Kevin Sperry, we don't really know how they're going to work out.
Right.
But, you know, it's more looking back at the early misses of the quarterback and the Chubba Purdy's and the Tate Rotemakers. And you know, the last thing I'll say on this is, remember, you know, we were talking before the show where I can give you a little bit of an asterisk by Chubba Purdy. He got injured, had surgery, got injured again. The surgery didn't heal well. He was from across country. There's the dad issue. He moves on, whatever. That got ruined by the injury. It was Mike Norvell's decision to, you know, let him play without a green jersey that year. But you also had Tate Rotemaker. That was the first quarterback Mike Norvell signed when he got here. It was COVID times.
He needed a quarterback.
You hadn't signed anyone in 2 years. Right. You needed somebody. Tate Rotemaker should have never been a starter here to begin with.
Nope.
Right? So those two guys I can kind of push off to the side and say, you know what? Desperate times call for deficit measures. Weird things happened. It is what it is. A.J. Duffy, you signed in 22 as a four-star blue-chip quarterback. Brock Glenn, that's a different story because you had him for a few years. But Luke Komenhoff, you signed as a four-star quarterback, five-star by On3 in 2024. Those two quarterbacks, you only had for 2 and 1 years. Mm-hmm. You didn't have time to ruin them from a development perspective. Mm-mm. So to me, when you look at what they've done since, which has been nothing but flame out, that calls on the evaluation misfalls, right? Mm-hmm. That so you have the thing is you have kind of like you have such an array of things that you can say about it, right? You have some that you can excuse, you have some that you can blame the development on in a Brock Glenn. You can have some that you can blame maybe the evaluation on in a AJ Duffy and Luke Komenhoff. So no matter where you slice it, they're missing on something at the quarterback position.
Yeah, I think you hit on the two things I wanted to hit on with the quarterback position. It's evaluation and it's development, point blank and simple. You know, you like you said, Chuba will give a little pass because that was all a thing. But there was a little bit of, as you mentioned in the pre-show, there was a little bit of hype around his name because of his brother. So he probably got boosted up a little bit more than he probably should have been. But still, Tate was never supposed to be a starter. He was always supposed to be a career backup. He was supposed to be your Sean McGuire, your JJ Constantino, right? That's what he was supposed to be. But he got thrown into the shuffle multiple times, and then he ends up transferring with bad advice from his dad, which then he went to Southern Miss and rolled the bench. You look at AJ Duffy, you look at Brock Glenn, and you look at Luke Komenhoff. Those are your ones that you should really study. Yeah. And you had bad evaluation on A.J. Duffy because he left and went to San Diego State. And what did we find out? He's at New Haven University.
Yeah.
Okay. Brock Glenn is now at Western Kentucky, but you had him for 3 years. So that's probably more so bad development over those three-year course of time. He never got better. You saw him in the ACC championship game. They had to basically abandon the pass game and go to a run game to try to win that game. He tried to come in after DJU. Couldn't. You know, we kept begging and begging and begging and begging for Brock Glenn. He finally gets in the game. He's no good. You can blame that maybe on the offensive line. That was a terrible year for the offensive line. Thank goodness we fired Alex Atkins. For some reason, we kept his head coach. Okay. Then you bring in Luke Komenhoff, five-star On3, four-star, was ranked number four QB in the 2024 class. Supposed to be this thing. We really only get to see him in the SMU game. And I think there was another game.
The Duke game. When
the Duke threw, game.
Literally, the first pass was a freaking dime. I was standing right behind his family, and they dropped it.
Oh, my gosh. Well, here's the thing, though. The kid transfers. He's at Mississippi State. And what did he do? He rode the bench.
Third string. I think he couldn't even beat out a freshman.
A terrible Mississippi State team. So that is evaluation. So not only are you bad at evaluating QBs, you've proven that you can't develop QBs. And now, yes, I know everybody, and we're just talking about high school. Set aside the transfer market because he only has one transfer quarterback that you can give him credit for. And he didn't even recruit that kid. He was already on the roster.
So, and you could honestly probably give Kenny Dillingham a lot of credit for that early development.
Bing! There you go right there. So now we've solved the issue. He is not a great QB evaluator. He's not a great QB developer. Kenny Dillingham, Dilly gets the credit for Jordan Travis. Yeah. So that makes sense why we're at where we're at.
Yeah, and one of the things that we talked about off air that I had kind of a, that actually turned out to be very, very meaty on this is I did have a theory, right, early on in Mike Norvell's career where, you know, he arrived in 2020, and I felt like, so I'll explain it the best way I can. So when you're at Memphis, right, you have your recruiting board. This is who you're signed up for, right? When you change to a place like Florida State, those Memphis recruits that you've been scouting for the last 4 years, they don't matter anymore. Mm-hmm. You might two out of 20, right, you can bring over to this school. But in 2020, when Mike Norvell arrived, you get smacked in the face with COVID and of no doing of his own, right? For everything Mike Norvell is or not, the guy's the most unlucky guy I've ever seen in my lifetime. Mm. But so I had this kind of off-the-cuff theory that I think anything in 2020 was just really hard to eval, right? Mm. From you can't get out and see him in person, and the recruiting services can't get out and see him in person. And so we went back and looked up. There were 19 blue-chip quarterbacks in 2020. Only two of them actually turned out to really be something, or four, excuse me, when you look at some of the guys that they had. I mean, DJU was the number one quarterback in the 2020 class. So, I mean, you had like a C.J. Stroud that hit, Bryce Young that hit, Carson Beck that hit, but everyone else, we were looking at half of them were wide receivers and running backs now. Mm-hmm. So I think that did muddy the water a little bit for Mike Norvell. But, man, what's so confusing about this is you saw him do more with less with some of these guys at Memphis, and here he can't find a quarterback to save his life, let alone develop him. You know, and then again, when you talk about you didn't recruit a quarterback in three of the first 4 years, you know, around what the time you came here, that just compounds it even worse.
Correct.
So it's just, man, it's been a tough situation. And like you said, that's what leads us to where we're at now.
Yeah. Oh, let me just throw water, ice, whatever. I don't care. Let me just throw a little bit of wrench into what you just said, because I just realized this and I didn't think about this. Jesse, the transfer portal started in October 15, 2018. Okay, that's when the transfer portal started, where you get this free transfer wherever. Okay, now Kurt Cignetti proved that you could take your James Madison team, bring it to a Power Four conference, and win 11 games. Okay, why didn't Mike Norvell bring his Memphis team that had just won a conference championship in 11 games to Florida State that year? Yeah, you don't go 3-6 with that team.
It's a really good question, because we've seen that narrative a lot, right? Where teams, they change head coach and they lose half the roster. And I don't know, man. Maybe it was
anybody.
Maybe no, I don't think they brought anybody.
No.
And we heard a lot about how they loved him and all that stuff. Yep. And so that is actually a really good question.
I just thought about that.
Yeah, and you would think that would have got you at least somewhat of a better start.
Because then think about it. If you bring those players over, okay, you bring those players over, and now you go to high school recruiting, you're not going 3-6 that year. Okay. So that's 9 games. Let's say they went 7-2, because all they played was ACC games that year. Let's say you go 7-2 that year, you go to a bowl game, whatever it is. Now, when you're recruiting the likes of Travis Hunter. When you're recruiting the Auburn guy that turned us down in the last second, all those guys that you got, you know, turned down on the last second and embarrassed on, you think that happens now? Because guess what? If you go, let's say you go 7-2 in 2020, you got that high school recruiting class that comes in 21, right? You got some of those guys still left over from Memphis that are still back. You're probably, you know, winning 7 or 8 games again. You're not an embarrassment. Then you get to the 22 year where you go 10-3. Guess what? You probably go undefeated that year.
Mm-hmm. And I just looked it up. Brady White was his quarterback in 2019 when they went to the Cotton Bowl. He played for Memphis in 2020. So, yeah, it's just another puzzling thing, right? Mm. It really is, because that probably would have helped you bridge the gap from dumpster fire to getting back to respectability. And so maybe you get more early career momentum. But, you know, again, man, we're going to talk about this later, but once you hit the 22, 23, the 23-4 streak, A lot of that goes away, right? Because he had so many things that happened to him when he first came to Florida State that were just bad, right? You didn't have relationships. You couldn't get out and make relationships. You made a couple of poor hires, things like that. But you know, we were, it was funny because we kind of came up with this example earlier where, like, so the start was bad, and I give him a little grace because you took over a dumpster fire, right? But then when 23-4 happens and 22-23, you kind of have to take that early part of the tenure and say, okay, well, that doesn't matter. You can't blame this on Jimbo anymore. You can't blame this on Willie anymore. You've overcome that. Mm-hmm. You had an undefeated regular season, and had you not have had Jordan get injured, you probably win a national championship that year. But the thing that I'm almost wondering is it kind of like the 23-24 portal was like a lottery ticket, right? Because Mike Norvell never recruited well in early in his tenure. He hasn't recruited well since then. I just wonder, was those 2 years like someone who's really bad with money that wins the lottery but is still really bad with money? So a couple years late, like, you were not good at recruiting and developing a roster. You hit on some transfer portal guys, a lottery ticket, which, granted, they get credit for. But once that group, once that lottery money ran out, it's back to the same bad money habits that you had before. And that's just really kind of what it feels like with Mike Norvell. And so when you get to that, you continue down this list here, and he talks about the seven quarterbacks that Mike Norvell has signed. Obviously, that's Chuba Birdie, Tate Rodemaker, A.J. Duffy, Brock Glenn, Luke Cromenhawk, Kevin Sperry, and Jaden O'Neal. Now, obviously, he says, I have to apologize to Jaden O'Neal because you just got here. You don't really
matter.
Get factored into this, right? But he says the seven quarterbacks that he's talking about in this article have started a grand total of 29 games in their career. That's it. Six quarterbacks with at least 1 year of playing eligibility, some with a lot more than that, have managed to start just 29 games. And that's not at Florida State. That's at any school.
Any school.
But the worst part, he says,
don't say it.
Of those 29 starts, 25 have come against FBS competition. So four were against FCS. You should guarantee those wins. How many of those games have those quarterbacks won? Two. A mere two wins. They are combined career record of 2-23. And the two wins that they had was Tate Rodemaker versus Florida in 2023, which the defense and Trey Benson won that game. And Brock Glenn versus Louisville a week later, the defense and Lawrence Toafili
won that game.
It's just tough, man. So when you look at the combined stats for Norvell's high school recruited quarterbacks at Florida State, 2-8 win-loss record, 48.3% completion percentage, 15 touchdowns, 13 interceptions, and a QBR of 32.
Yeesh.
That is tough, man. That is tough. And, you know, this comes – we're going to talk about the blue chips here in a minute, but this does come back to the conversation that we've had multiple times on the show, to where this is high school. But even when it comes to portal, because we've seen them follow the national trend of portal quarterback. Like, everyone seems to – you were talking about this before the show. Where is even high school quarterback recruiting going to go in the next 5 years? Everybody seems to be taking transfer quarterbacks. Even when you went into the transfer market, you hit with Jordan and you flopped on basically everybody else. And the approach that you've taken has been to take broken quarterbacks that have played at more than one Power Four school and now are looking for a third home, or, you know, because even Castellanos, don't forget the UCF year. And everybody kind of knew what they were beforehand. And then you brought them in thinking you could make them something they were not, and they turned out to be exactly what they were before they arrived. And so the quarterback troubles, my point is, it is awful from a high school level. But outside of Jordan, the transfer level hasn't been much better either.
But that's the problem. That's the thing, though, Jesse. Can we even – I mean, we can give Dilly the credit for developing Jordan, but they didn't recruit him. He was already on campus – and Willie just stuffed him in a closet and tried to make him a wide receiver.
Yeah.
So basically, if Dilly wasn't here, does Jordan even develop into the quarterback he became?
Probably not. So it's hard to say,
It's hard to say, but the evidence shows you. So it's really like you have not done well at quarterback at all in your tenure here, high school or portal. And and you have to wonder now that you have mounting evidence, right? The prosecutor would say, I have more than enough to prove you guilty. I have more than a reasonable doubt to say you are not good at QB development. I don't know what happened with Brady White at Memphis, how you got him to be that good, but you have not done that here at Florida State one bit.
Yeah, and you had Dilley with you for a little bit there at Memphis too. And here's the thing. One thing that he points, David Hale points out in his article, that's a really good point when, you know, because we've always said, like, well, who gets credit for Jordan Travis? Because Kenny wasn't here when he had the success on the field, but, you know, he talked about a lot. I remember he used to talk about – I miss Kenny. He was so funny. Mm-hmm. He was talking about the bamboo example where, like, it grows for, like, whatever, 90% of its – thing in the ground and it just shoots out of the ground. So maybe the development framework had already been laid there. But my point is, when you look at, well, who gets credit? I think it's what happened since then that you really look at, right? Okay, so he leaves. He does this with Jordan, takes a quarterback and turns him from almost a converted wide receiver to top five in the Heisman. He also goes and does the same thing with Bo Nix.
And remember, Auburn basically ran Bo Nix out of town.
Yep. So he goes to Oregon, does the same thing with Bo Nix, and then he goes to Arizona State, and Sam Leavitt does the same thing with Sam Leavitt. Now, what has Mike Norvell done since then? DJU, Tommy Castellanos, okay, and any other high school quarterback doesn't matter because they didn't turn into anything. So now you can see the credit definitely kind of gets laid at Kenny Dillingham's feet for what Jordan Travis was. So again, the evidence is piling up even worse on Mike Norvell. And so the conversation then comes to, well, is it just quarterback, man? Is it just the evaluation? What is the deal? So then he broadens the picture to basically the entire recruiting classes. Let's see as a whole, is it as bad for everywhere as it is at quarterback? Sadly, that answer is yes.
Yes.
So he looks at it and he says, so since that time in 2020 to 2025, in those classes, Florida State has signed 41 blue chip recruits out of high school. These are not transfers. Again, that's about 7 a year, which is below what you'd expect from a place like FSU, but it's not exactly problematic, as he points out. But the thing is, man, I think there's two conversations here, right, when you talk about these.
Yeah.
So, obviously, when you talk about the 41 players that they did get, it's not a very high number. I crunched some numbers here on this, and in the same amount of time, in that same five-year window that you signed from 2020 to 2025, that you signed 41 blue chips, Georgia, who's the peak example of programs over that time, signed 128. 128 blue chips. Jeez. That's three times the amount that you have. Clemson, who by the time 2020 to 2025 came, was on the backside of their most successful years. They've signed 83, over double what you signed. And so you wonder why you can't keep up anymore. So again, this goes back to the recruiting issues that we have. You're not stocking enough talent. And even though you're not stocking enough talent, what has happened with the talent that you did get? So keep in mind the 41 players there. So of those 41 blue chip recruits, only four have started at least 12 games for you. That's Patrick Payton, Azaria Thomas, Blake Nicholson, and KJ Kirkland. Azaria and KJ has some promise, we're still waiting to see how good those other ones become, right? Because Patrick Payton was who he was because of who Jared Verse was.
Correct.
More than half, 23 of 41, never started a single game at Florida State. As a group, those 41 players combined for just 151 starts total, with Payton alone accounting for over a quarter of that number. 29 of the 41 have already transferred. 16 of those 29 landed at Group of Five or FCS schools. Not one has developed into an all-conference performer elsewhere. So his bottom line is basically that, man, the talent that you have got has not been at a fast enough clip to compete with the elites of the world. And also what you've got, roughly 90% of it has turned into nothing.
Exactly. And then, Jesse, let me ask you this. Of the 41 blue chippers, how many were drafted?
I'm going to go with probably not many, right?
One.
Insane.
Azaria Thomas.
Well, two, if you count Josh Farmer.
Yeah. Okay.
They're the only high school draftees that they've had in that time. That's tough, man. That is tough.
We're talking about a program, Jesse, that prior to Willie Taggart, because even though Willie had some draft picks, but they were really Jimbos.
Yeah.
We were constantly in the first round, second round, top rounds, you know. Now you take out you take out 2024 where, or you take out the 24 season where we got a whole bunch of players drafted. They were all
10 draft
players.
Picks.
Yeah. Yep. They were all transfer portal players. We were constantly there. Did you know, I said this to you in the pre-show. This is the third straight year where the first round of NFL draft just took place last night. Sean McVay and Les, I'm really mad at you right now. Anyways, from the Rams. The draft was last night. This is the third year in a row. Florida State does not have a top draft pick, first round draft pick. Third year straight.
Yeah.
That was unheard of before Willie Taggart and Mike Norvell.
Yeah, 100%. And the thing is, you know, when you look at it, and I have, well, trust me, when we get to the draft part, this is going to make a lot more sense. So we'll wrap this up and then we'll go into the draft part. You know, but basically, kind of the way we wind this down, this segment of the show is that, like I said, man, you have not been able to get elite level of talent, and you haven't been able to develop that into doing anything for you. Excuse me, because a major majority of your blue chips, and again, keep in mind, Indiana broke the blue chip standard. I get that, right. But 90% of the time, it held true for over a decade. So the talent still has to matter.
Yep.
Right. But at the same time, a lot of it gets back to like the spending and the way that you've handled this. And, you know, we were talking about this before the show where maybe you didn't need the sixth and seventh receiver. Maybe you could have cut five guys that were making six figures and put that into the quarterback position. So, again, man, I just really think it comes back to his point is true. It's like less money is being spent in critical positions at the quarter. We know they've budget, you know, moneyballed the quarterback position for the last couple of years. And, you know, it's funny. We were talking about this before the show. You had a $25 million roster last year. You moneyballed yourself. You had no reason to moneyball. And here's the other interesting thing that I thought when we were talking about this. Sorry to keep side noting. But you brought in a GM who had just won an ACC championship at Duke because they paid $4 million for a quarterback.
Yep.
And then you get here and you decide, he said, collectively, we as a staff decided we don't want to get into the big money quarterback waters. So you had literally just seen it pay off, which is why you got hired at a place like Florida State. And then you get here and you go, nah, we're not going to do that. We're going to keep doing the same method that won us seven games over the past 2 years. It's just, man, it's, and I'm not saying that Garrett is not going to end up working out well. I think he's a good hire. I don't get it, man. I don't get the way they approach the money. I don't get why they've allowed this recruiting fallout or whatever to happen for so long, because Mike Norvell's never been a good recruiter. Mm-hmm. He's not going to wake up overnight and become a good recruiter. Nope. He doesn't hold his staff to high recruiting standards. We've heard that across the board a ton of times. So it really does come back to not being able to stock the roster well enough with talent, not being able to develop that into anything. And then when you're going to the transfer market, not spending your NIL money efficiently. And so that's the end of what I have for that section. I'll throw it back to you, let you give some thoughts on that, and then we'll move on to the draft, which plays really well into this.
Yeah, well, I'll quickly just say with the spending to close out the recruiting is, you're right. And I said this in the last episode, $25 million is not Ohio State money, okay? You're not spending with the upper echelons like LSU that's planning on spending $40 million or has spent $40 million. Ohio State's in that $40 million range there. But you've spent what we're going to estimate probably is top three in the ACC. You spent more than Stanford. You spent more than Pittsburgh. You spent more than even Virginia that got a swoon of money this past season. You still spent more than them. $25 million puts you in the top three, particularly probably behind definitely Miami and maybe Clemson. You should have been in contention for an ACC conference championship berth this year, right? So you can miss me with the, well, they don't have enough funding. It's all like that. No, no, no. You have money. And then the other idea is, and I mentioned this in the last episode, I'm using the example from the University of Kentucky, you know, they pay their most important positions the most: quarterback, defensive line, offensive line, DBs. The four most important positions, they pay them the most. So Florida State, why are you not in the 2.5 to 3.5, maybe $4 million QB market? Why are you not into getting the best offensive and defensive linemen? you don't need DBs. We got DBs galore. Yeah. Instead, we're going out and buying another tight end for the 20th time, another running back for the 80th time. Like, we're buying positions and putting big dollars in positions we don't need. That's like me getting in a house and saying, you know what? I don't need electric. I don't need water. I need another Lazy Boy chair. Yeah. I need another towel that I need. I need some more socks. What are we doing? You need electricity. You need running water.
Start with the most important positions first and then work your way out. And then
build on that.
Right. And that's the hard part. And, you know, the thing that's compounded on this is when you continue to miss at the high school level, and, you know, it goes back to the Jimbo example. When you had so much talent on the roster that if a couple of evals didn't work out, well, you felt like you had some more to fall back on. But this is what we talked about. Gosh, this has probably been a year ago, last offseason, where we had said the three little pigs example, where like if you build your foundation out of straw and then you miss on a couple of these things, you're in trouble. When you don't recruit high school well enough to where it's like, okay, this guy's talented. He's just not Landon Thomas. Great example.
Right.
Super talented, probably not ready to be on the field yet. Right. But whenever if you miss on a transfer, he's got to be good right now. Right. And you feel pretty good about that, but you don't have time for him to develop and get into that because you're mis-evaling your transfers, which need to start now. And you don't have enough at the high school level. You haven't recruited well enough or developed well enough that you can just be like, okay, well, get that guy out, get DJU out of there. Let's put Brock Glenn in there and he'll be fine because he's just young, but we've developed him.
Right.
That's not the case.
Nope.
Your first choice at the position could be a flop and you don't have one that's second that's good enough to compete with the other teams on your schedule.
Right.
And so where that brings me in this conversation, that brings me to the NFL draft talk, right? And we saw most of you watched the first round of the NFL draft last night. This really is just confirmation. I got a lot of notes on this, but I'm going to make it flow well for you guys. This is confirmation of the last show that we talked about that really just kind of fell in my lap, right? And I want to say before we get into this is not about whether a player did good in the NFL or not, right? This is some of them we still don't know if they're going to be good or not. We just don't know. But this is more about looking at how top-rated recruits who go to a top-tier school and were seen as a good enough player to be taken in the first round averages out over time, right? It's just data. That's all this is. This is not opinionated. And so being we've only seen the first round at the time this is being recorded, we're just going to focus on first-round draft picks, right? Because first rounds are like five stars. Typically, they don't miss. I think I saw where first-round draft picks, I think like 70% of the time are starters in the NFL at some point in their career. So focusing on the first round, because that's all we have to go off of right now, out of 32 first-round picks last night, 22 were high school recruits, non-transfers. Mm. Only 10 were transfers. Over the last 5 years, including this year, 2026, here's your high school versus transfer percentage. High school has accounted for 69, 78, 72, 81, or 84, and 91% of first-round draft picks. 78.8% of first-rounders over the past 5 years were high school recruits that did not transfer. 73% in the last year. Now, I will say you have started to see the transfer numbers creep up a little bit. In 22, it was only 3. In 26, it was 10. Mm-hmm. So those numbers are creeping up. But what it shows you, Michael, is that the majority of these players that are first-round talents are guys who were blue-chip recruits, brought into a program, developed over a period of time, and then sent off into the NFL for their future career. Now, the first rounders from playoff teams in 2025, 16, literally half of the draft picks came from playoff teams, right? So it kind of tells you that to be a playoff team, you need talent, right? Mm-hmm. That's a pretty obvious draw there. 2024, same story. 16 of your top 32 picks were on playoff teams. Now, Notre Dame last year was the team that was controversial. They got left out.
Right.
If you include them, that's 18 picks out of the first. That's the majority. Mm. In 2024, you know, Miami and Alabama were the two that were tied for being left out. If you just bump them in there, that's 19. Again, the majority. So here's the part about that kind of drives us home, right? 50 to 60% of first round picks came from playoff or playoff caliber teams. Well, in a 12-team playoff, that's only 8.8% of FBS. So that means, in a sense, less than 10% of FBS teams accounted for 50-plus percent of the first-round draft picks. Mm. Even in the 14 playoff, it was pretty similar numbers, right? In 23, you had 9, and 22, you had 7. So, again, you're talking about roughly 5% of FBS teams were coming up. I mean, that, or excuse me, 3% was coming up with these draft picks. But Michael, why does that matter? What does it, what does all this even matter? Well, only 7 different programs over in the CFP era from 2014 to now, roughly 5% of FBS teams have won 100% of the national titles in that era. So the point is, you see how it's concentrated in who's getting, producing these first round picks. It's the Ohio States, it's the Georgias, it's the Alabamas. Those are also the teams that are winning the national championships. So it tells you the success. Indiana is still the only outlier that we have.
Right.
They had 2 first round draft picks last night. So what that tells you, if you can't recruit them, you better be able to develop them and put them in a position to win like Indiana did.
Correct.
Kind of the opposite of what we've seen. And so I'm going to, let me finish these couple of things. And I'll throw it back to you for thoughts on the first part. And then I found a New York Times article that backed up what I'm talking about here. So you remember last week when I talked about the 4 elites from that show,
yep,
where there were 4 programs in the CFP era that have made the playoffs at least 5 times and won multiple national championships. This is the best of the best. That's Bama, Georgia, Clemson, and Ohio State. And I know Clemson's on the downside of their run. Those 4 teams, which account for literally 3% of FBS, accounted for 105 draft picks in the CFP, or 27% of first-round draft picks. Those elites are producing first-round level draft picks at a clip that's unheard of. And that is why they are where they're at.
Yep.
And what did you say? This is like the 3rd out of the last 4 years or something like that, that we haven't had a first-round draft pick. So, man, it just ties back into everything we've been talking about. But before I go into the New York Times article, man, just give me some thoughts about what you're hearing here. And again, the summary of all this is, it's still high school dominant in the first round.
Yeah.
First round picks are still dominated by playoff caliber teams. Playoff caliber teams are still dominated by high school recruiting and development. The things we just spent 30 minutes talking about, Florida State wasn't doing well.
Yeah, for sure. Like, now, to be fair to the transfer portal, the first 3 players taken in the draft were transfer portal players, right? For sure. Let's get that out of the way. I know you'll be in the comments saying that, so whatever.
It's the evidence, majority versus minority is what I'm
correct.
Trying to say.
The evidence is clear that you still have to dominate high school recruiting. You still have to find the best of the best. Now, yes, you don't have the ability to keep them every year, so you're having to play those high schoolers faster than what you normally would, because you'd want them to sit behind, obviously, more experienced players. You still got to recruit the high school players. You can't rely on the portal, because the portal giveth and the portal taketh away. And sometimes you have a really good portal class, a la 22-23, and sometimes you get beat, or it's just not a great portal class, and you have what you had in 24 and what you got in 25, right? You cannot rely on the portal. The portal, as the first round just told us, should be you recruit. The formula should be you recruit your mainstays from high school and you supplement with the portal, right? So, you know, you can't look at an Indiana because they're an outlier. But, like, let's look at a Notre Dame. Right? That's a better thing to look at. They recruited a bunch of kids that they developed, and then they went and got specific pieces that they needed. Jeremiah Love is one of them, out of the portal, to use over that 2-year run where they got to the national championship. And yeah, you could argue that they probably should have been in over Alabama, whatever you want to call it there. Boom. They were there, right? That's what you want to do. Now, you might say, well, what about Texas Tech? Most of their kids came from the portal. You're right. They have oil money.
Yeah.
They're getting the best of the best every single year. But guess what? If you look at Joey Gal, I can't think of his name right now, but I know his first name is Joey, the coach at Texas Tech. If you look at what they're doing, yeah, they went out and got Sorsby. They went out and spent $7 million on him or whatever in the quarterback. But they're also killing it in high school recruiting right now. They have the number one ranked recruiting class currently in the country. Yes, because of oil money, but guess what? Joey realizes that he can't sustain what he's built at Texas Tech on the portal. He's getting in the high school. And so, yeah, to your point, Jesse, the draft is showing us you've got to have a foundation where high school recruiting is your oil that's coming in. And then your igniter is the transfer portal. That's what's igniting the oil. right? Yep. You've got to mesh those really well.
Yeah, it's always been the complaint with Mike Norvell is because I was in favor of the portal early on.
I'll be
100% honest. I was in favor of that. But it always turned into like, okay, you can't build the foundation out of this, right? You can supplement the roster with a 4 or 5 starters that you might need, but you can't be bringing in 11, 12 new starters every year. You know, y'all know I love these crazy little analogies, but we just had a space shuttle launch, right? Mm-hmm. The portal was supposed to be the rocket boosters that got you off the pad, mm-hmm. right? And then the main engine was the high school recruiting that would carry you into orbit to the moon or wherever. Carry you to the moon. That's where we're trying to go. Well, at some point, you got to jettison those rocket boosters and start relying on the main engine because they're not going to last forever. Mike Norvell just forgot to turn the main engine on and has kept the rocket boosters the whole time. And now this thing has gone all wonky and we're not going to make it to the moon at all.
Or right? He doesn't even know where the switch is for the main engine because he's never even seen a main engine.
Right. Well, he knows what it looks like, remember.
Yeah, oh, yeah, that's right.
But at the same time, it's just the fact that, like, you can't build the foundation out of that, right? Correct. You have to build – you have to supplement through the portal. Again, Indiana is the wrench in the plans, right? But we're going to see how sustainable that is. Remember, in 24, he took a ton of his players from JMU, played a really weak schedule, got their face kicked in anytime they played somebody good. And then last year, they had a bunch of 26-year-olds who would probably be selling insurance in any other world but the NIL transfer portal world and dominated. So he did it, but let's see.
But I will also say, Jesse, on top of that is – you're starting to hear that Indiana is in the conversation with some of these big high school names. Why? Because SIG recognizes that the portal, I would say this, and I'll throw this back to you to move us on. I would say this, the portal is a good, like if you're a new coach and you need to get to winning now, you got about a 2 year, and that's pushing it, window to get into the portal, get the players you need, and get some winning so that you can then go recruit the best of the best high school players. But you got about a 2 year window into that. Now you might look at an Ole Miss and say, well, look at Lane Kiffin did every year. He's in the portal. It didn't. No. Don't let that fool you, because underneath all that portal gloss that he had, he was recruiting some really good high school players. Okay. And now he's at LSU where he's going to have a top $40, $50 million budget. Let's see. But so Indiana is also realizing, hey, this was only a 2 year window with the portal. We have to now get really serious about high school recruiting so that we can then supplement in the portal.
Exactly. And I think the biggest part of that is because the portal might give you 6,000-8,000 athletes a year, but it's just so unpredictable to know what's going to be in the portal. Is it going to be good enough? Can you afford to beat out everyone else who's looking for that left tackle where you can work on a relationship for like 4 years? And I know there was a time where we were like, man, give me the portal, right? Yep. Because I always made the comparison of Jamie Robinson. You took him as a transfer from South Carolina. He was a 2-time All-ACC player for you. Mm-hmm. You signed him in 10 days from the time he entered the portal and probably got him for relatively decent because NIL wasn't crazy back then. KJ Bolden, you fought for that kid for years. Spent probably more on recruiting budget on him than you did on Jamie Robinson, and nothing happened. You lost him. So I don't want to sound like I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth. I like the portal, but it's still the formula. The numbers always come back to, besides Indiana, this is the method. And so the New York Times article kind of was doing the same thing that I was doing. But now their data lags by 1 year because they didn't include, this was an old article. This is their NFL draft numbers from 2021 to 2025, right? Mm. So in the last 5 years, only 7 players were not ranked in the 247 composite, 4.3%. Of the first round draft picks. So you pretty much, if you're trying to do this whole like Jared Verse thing every year, that is very much the not common thing to happen, right? That is the rarity. 80.1% of the players drafted overall, not just in the first round, in the entire draft, were ranked as 3 stars or better. Mm. So over those years in the first round, 5 stars made up 26% of first round draft picks and 4 stars were 39%. So again, man, you're talking about in that window, you know, keep in mind there's only like 32 5-stars on average roughly per year, and there's about 300 to 400 4-stars. And in the recent 5-year draft window that they're talking about, 65% of first-round picks, 104 of 160, were blue-chip recruits. And 52% of players taken in the first 3 rounds were blue-chip recruits coming out of high school. And so the other thing that they talk about is what's more impressive from a development standpoint are the Power Four programs that are ranked outside of the top 40, but producing in recruiting, but producing picks at a top 40 level. And Pitt Panthers was one of those that tops the list, right? They've had 20 draft picks over the last 5 years, including two first rounders, second most in the ACC behind Clemson. Of those 20 picks, only three were transfers, and among that, 17 were homegrown talents, only one blue chip recruit coming out of high school. So again, man, it comes back to you either need to be able to recruit at a high level or develop at a high level. Mm-hmm. And right now, we're just not seeing that from either side.
Yeah. Yeah, I got one more thing for it, one more stat. I just found this. So if you go back 5 years, no, sorry, if you go back 10 years ago, Florida State was in the top 10. And I would even argue, I think they were in the top 7 or 8 and most first round draft picks. Okay. As of last night, they have now dropped to 13th in the country. You let Georgia, LSU, Michigan, Texas, Oklahoma, and Tennessee lap you. You are ahead of them.
Yeah.
You have 47. Tennessee has 48, OU has 51, Texas has 51, Georgia has 53, and LSU has 54, and Michigan has 55. The next is Florida at 60, okay? So you are always behind Florida because obviously they had a head start than you did. But you, Michigan, which has the most wins in college football, I believe, you are ahead of them. But over the last 10 years, you have literally been lapped by these guys.
And when you look at the first part of this conversation that we talked about, right, with the all the numbers and stuff I laid out about first-round draft picks and how it leads to from playoff teams and all that type of stuff, again, man, you can see the trend, right? When you stop producing the draft picks, it's like oil, you know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. you have to get it out of the ground, mm-hmm. you have to move it, you got to mm-hmm. refine it. And so if there's no oil at the pump, that means there's a problem in the processor, right?
Correct.
So the origination of your process is not leading to the results that tell you you're good, right? We know the on-field results, but it's not even like you're going, oh man, we got so much talent. How is this happening? The problem is you're not getting the talent, and then you're not maximizing the smaller amount of talent you got. So Michael, let's go back to the elites that we talked about before, the Georgia, Bama, Clemson, Ohio State, what they've done in the playoff era. Combined, the four elites we mentioned earlier had 100, using their data set, 2021 to 2025, or the New York Times articles. I did this as a side project. So in that window, 21 to 25, those four teams alone have combined for 161 total draft picks. Only 19 of them, or 12%, were transfers. 88% were high school recruits. In that same data set of the top 15 programs from a draft pick standpoint, those teams ranked first, second, fourth, and 12th. Clemson was 12th. Florida State was not in the top 15, right? Mm. South Carolina was in the top 15. We were not in the top 15. And that's despite having 10 players taken in 2024. So you had a 10-player class and still couldn't crack the top 15 from 21 to 25. Now, here's the thing again, man, when I get back to, you know, and I know we're not Georgia. I know we're not Alabama right now, which you just beat Alabama last year. But that's where you're trying to be, right? That's where Florida State belongs. So getting back to these examples, Mike Norvell has produced two NFL draft picks that he's actually recruited to FSU because, you know, I'm blanking on his name. That was not his recruit.
Yeah.
So it's been Azaria and Josh Farmer. So from 2021 now, keep in mind, Norvell produced two NFL draft picks since he's been from 2020 to 2025 class. From 21 to 25, in just those years, Kirby Smart has produced 47 high school draft picks, non-transfers. Jeez. 47. So he has signed, what did I say, three times as many blue chips and produced 47 more draft picks. Do you wonder why they're at the position that they're at? And you're not. And so let me bring it home with this. This will kind of be the end of the thing here of this segment. So the bigger picture from last week, this is how I'm going to kind of tie it all in here.
Okay.
So keep in mind, there have been 11 teams to win a national championship in the CFP era. Seven different programs have won a national championship since 2015. Eight of those 11 programs or 8 of those 11 teams have had an average recruiting class ranking inside the top 10 the 4 years prior to their title season. So it tells you before they won, they recruited at a top 10 level to get the talent necessary to win a national championship. 10 of those 11 teams were at least top 15. Indiana's the only outlier. 10 of 11 were top 15 in talent. 9 were top 10 in talent. 7 were top 5 in talent. Here's where it gets interesting, where we tie it back to Florida State, right? And let me say, when I get into this little comparison that I'm about to do, this is not advocating for Jimbo Fisher, right? To make the second coming of Jimbo. Damn, that was a fun time, though, for a little while.
Yes, it was.
Right? But here's the thing. So when we tie it back to Florida State, Florida State has had 2 top 15 classes since the end of the Jimbo era, right? 0 top 10 classes. Now, remember what I just told you about.
Okay.
10 of the last 11 national championships had at least a top 15 class. You have had 2 since 2017 when Jimbo left, right? 0 top 10 classes, not a single one. Now, Willie had a couple, didn't do anything with them, but you have had 0 top 10 classes. Norvell has had 1 top 15 ranked roster. Coincidentally, it was 2024. It was his worst year. And 0 top 10 rosters. So it tells you, look, 10 out of the last 11 years tells you got to be here, here, and here.
Right.
You're not here, here, and here. So you're not going to be in that club. That's kind of what it equals to. Willie did have a top 10 roster both seasons. Who the hell knows what happened there?
Right.
Now, here's the comparison part. Jimbo signed 1 class outside of the top 10, and it was number 11. I don't know his talent rankings back then because they don't go past 2015.
Right.
But one could fairly assume that they were probably top 10 by the way they recruited and knowing they were top 5 in talent his last 3 years there, 15, 16, and 17. Jimbo's record at FSU, the point is, look at the talent and the recruiting that Jimbo did, right? His FSU in a nutshell, 8 years, 83 and 23, 26% of his losses came in 2017 alone, won a natty, 3 ACC titles, made the CFP, had 2 undefeated regular seasons, made a bowl 7 out of 8 years, won 4 of those, or 5 of those, and finished ranked 7 out of 8 years. He had 1 losing season, 5-6 in 2017. Boy, 2017 was bad. Mike Norvell at FSU, 6 years in. I know this is year 7, but we're talking about 6 years of data. Look, I'm going to start with saying he took over a worse situation at a bad time. I give him grace for that. Jimbo also didn't have the portal to pull already developed college players from. Not saying that Mike Norvell and them did not develop any transfers, because they did develop some of them, but most of the good ones were already good. Jamie Robinson, Jermaine Johnson, Jared Verse, those guys, they didn't develop them. If you missed on evals and development before the portal, you were just screwed, because it's what you had, right?
Correct.
You couldn't go get someone else's successes. Mike Norvell in 6 years, 2 less years, is 38 and 34. 29% of his losses came in 2024. He's won 1 ACC title, had 1 undefeated regular season, made 2 bowls in 6 years, 1 win, finished ranked 2 out of 6 seasons. But he's also had 4 losing seasons, the worst bowl loss in FBS history, the first loss to Duke, the first loss to an FCS team, and the worst season in 5 decades. The point of all that is, say what you want about Mike Norvell as a coach, the number one difference between him and Jimbo's tenure, talent, 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 talent. We talked about this in the opening of the episode. Jimbo didn't hit on develop every single recruit that he brought in. He had plenty of blue chip busts himself.
Yep.
The difference is the amount you were able to get to ensure that when busts happened, you were fine. So that, to me, it would seem, based on the data, remember, this is just data, this is not opinion, the formula for sustainable success is still elite high school recruiting and development. And until FSU can do that again, they will probably be stuck where they're at.
Yeah. Listen, I mean, what do I say?
It's hard to respond
it's
to.
It's damning evidence that you just rolled out. Like, if I was the judge, I would tell the jury, hey, guys, don't even worry about a verdict. He's guilty. That dude is guilty as heck. Go ahead. Put the sentence, because
it's almost impossible to respond to. And you know, the funny thing is, we talked about one thing I said last week is when Mike Norvell was a trailblazer when he started the portal thing. But the further you got into it, man, you didn't have to you didn't have to reinvent the wheel.
No.
You could look at Georgia. You could look at Ohio State. You could look at Alabama. He even looked at those teams, said, I looked at the playoff teams, and the way they rotated their defensive line is the way we're going to rotate our defensive line. Well, Mike, look at how they got successful. and look at what you're doing the opposite of.
Yeah. Yeah.
The plans are there. All you had to do is follow them.
Plans are there. And Florida State recruits to itself. Now, again, this is something that I think a lot of the big blue bloods are learning, especially in college basketball. And now we're seeing it in college football is to be one of these premier programs. It doesn't mean the same thing it used to mean long time ago. This isn't like the old school, like where, you know, Bobby Bowden or Dabo walk into your living room and charm your grandma and charm your uncle and aunts and cousins and moms, and they just get you and they got you locked in for 3 years at minimum, right? So the brand doesn't mean as much as the brand plus the development plus the money. All three have to go together. And right now, we have the brand. We're still one of the most iconic brands in college football. Yet you'll never tell me anything different.
Yep.
We don't have the coaching and we don't have the development, but we do have the money to be contenders in the ACC.
Yep.
I'm not saying we're going to be contenders as one of the top four teams in the country, but dadgummit, we have the money to be contenders in the ACC. Outside of Miami and maybe Clemson, we're spending more than Virginia. We're spending more than Pitt. We're spending more than Stanford. I already went through that point. So again, you got to have all three: branding, coaching, development, and resources to get the kind of players. Mike, you have the resource and you have the brand. You are screwing this up. And
I know. The problem is, like, when people hear this, they're going to go, well, duh, Captain Obvious. Like, we're not telling you anything you don't know. Right. We're just putting numbers behind it. And to your point, man, so back to what we talked about last week and what you just hit on about the brand cachet and the resources and all that. Also, the geographical thing. Like, yes. We talked about that last week, right? But here's the other interesting fact that New York Times put in their article. From 21 to 25, the top talent-producing states, Texas was number one, producing 157 draft picks, 19 first-rounders, 42%. Florida was number two, 139 total draft picks, 16 first-rounders, a 40% blue-chip ratio coming out of the state. Georgia was third, 120, 20, and 47. Then it goes to California at 96, and Louisiana's next drops all the way down to 53. So the two of the four most talent-rich states, you are either in that state mm-hmm. or the closest Florida program to that state. Mm. So you have a little bit of leg up getting into Georgia, too. Mm. So the talent, again, is there, man. That's the hard part. Now, a couple of things that I want to tie this to, and we'll wrap up the draft and all that stuff. Here's a couple of the stab and twist moments, right? The things that really hurt when you start talking about where Florida State's at. Last night, first-round draft of the 2026 NFL draft, Central Florida, Florida, Miami all had first-round draft picks last night. We were the only Power 4 school in Florida to not have one. Miami had three. Clemson, your ACC rival, had two. Even Arizona State had two first-round draft picks. A guy
Arizona
that
State, bro.
Was a nobody whenever Kenny Dillingham got there. Also, Keldrick Falk, to your point, you mentioned this earlier, went in the first round. That's now 2 years in a row that a Mike Norvell miss has went in the first round. Mm. It's just, man, it's the little things. And so as we bring this segment to a close, man, I don't want to sit here and bore you guys with numbers. I don't want to sit here and rehash things we've talked about 100 times.
Right.
But as we dissect, like, what the hell, Mike Norvell, how we got here, how Florida State got into this position, it's not like, you know, butterflies and unicorn farts, man. This ain't feelings. This is hard data that shows this is what it takes to be successful, and this is what you're not doing. And for some reason, the administration is just allowing this to happen. Like, Mike Norvell, regardless of his record, his job should be in question based on his recruiting history and habits, for one. And then you add the results with it. But it's like, because of A leads to B, because of B leads to C. You don't get enough talent, you don't develop it. That's A. You don't win on the field. That's B. You don't produce draft picks, so now you don't equal a championship contender. That's just where it's at, man. We're just painting the picture for you guys that you probably already know. We're just putting evidence behind it. So that was the whole point of that segment, man, is just kind of, like you said, pulling back the curtains on, man, how did we even get here? Most of you know this, but to the casuals, to the non-FSU fans and them, we're putting substance behind the things we talk about.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's just – and yeah, And I get the administration's in a difficult situation. You know, they have to balance trying to be, wise stewards of the resources that they're given, but also, you know, put together a championship level program. The issue is this is college athletics, bro. The university is going to be just fine. They got an endowment fund. It's somewhere in the billions, or at least high millions, close to a billion. I remember we did a episode about this once. So they're good. The university's good. This ain't the university's problem. This is athletics. And the name of the game is, if you want to win, you got to spin.
Yep.
Right?
Particularly in football.
Particularly in football. Because football will support everything else. I think they just released a thing. We just mentioned earlier, $250 million they're going to spend. They were talking about looking at different models to where they're going to have to cost cut. They don't want to cut any Olympic sport. Well, guess what? If you don't want to cut any Olympic sport, you see that cow bell over there called the football program? You got to get that thing humming again. Because you're going to have to do something. Because if that thing goes down, the whole profile of the university goes down. And it hasn't been good the last few years. So we got to get that back up.
Yeah, and I think one important point to that is also with the new revenue models, it directly benefits you to be good at football and men's basketball. So you need to be heavily investing into those programs. And I know they are, but there's still the disconnect that you have to recruit. And I think right now our 27 classes rank 30th.
Yep.
I know it's still very early in that class. But again, man, when you look at the data that we've laid out over the last two shows and you look at the results that you've got out of that and the resources that you put into it, it literally all comes back to high school recruiting. And if we just told you, you know, let me give this example as kind of my closing thought on this topic. We talked about this before with Mario at Miami. We're talking about who might be the next head coach at Florida State, and you hope they temper expectations and then let's build this thing right. You know, with Mario, Lord knows I hate giving him credit for anything. Mm-hmm. But with Mario, they weren't good the first 2 to 3 years, right? But you could see the recruit, like, we're going to stick to the recruiting process. We're going to stock this roster with talent. Yes, money helped them get that talent. But when things weren't necessarily great, you were like, okay, well, we still got the talent, man. We might reload and be better for next year.
Right.
Where is that same anchoring feeling for Mike Norvell? Like, am I supposed to be excited that we have the 30th ranked recruiting class for next year? No. What is my hope that we're going to be able to pull out of this tailspin?
Exactly.
Because when it comes back to recruiting, well, man, no matter how good you are in the portal or not, that's been the one Achilles heel that you've not been good at this entire time, is recruiting and developing, particularly at the quarterback position.
Yep.
I need something to believe in right now. And unless they greatly overachieve and say win 9 or 10 games this year, do you really think they're just going to wake up and land a top 10 class? I don't think so either. And so it just kind of gets you into this a treadmill of misery, right? Yep. Where it's just, you just can't get off of it until someone knocks you off of it or unplugs the dang on thing.
That's right.
And so I understand the administration has painted themselves into a financial corner, but it's going to cost you, man, the longer you hang on to this. And the next guy that you bring in, I think it should be pedigree driven. It needs to be a guy who's shown he can be part of an elite recruiting staff. That has to be the backbone of everything. But now the last thing I want to say just real quick before we get out of here, because I know we ran you guys a little bit long, is just a tip of the cap to some of the other spring sports that are in action right now, man. Can we get Luke Laux to recruit for the football program? Because this dude, I'm telling you, is working magic. I mean, at one, they've slipped a little bit because they've taken some lower ranked guys. But last week when I wrote an article, they were top 10 in high school, top 25 in the portal. They've slipped a little bit since because they take some JUCO guys, some unranked guys. But this roster overhauled from last year. So I'm really, really excited about basketball and the direction that it's going. That's what I'm talking about. That's what I just talked about with football. Was basketball good this year? No. Nope. But finished strong, and they're recruiting their butts off. So I feel real good about the future.
They went and got high school as their foundation, portal to supplement.
It's the exact formula we want to see from football, right? Yep. I don't know how much he knows about football, but I mean, can we get him? Can he be the co-coach?
Exactly. He can be the GM.
Exactly. And then softball, quick tip of the cap to the ladies who, you know, they had a little rough weekend out there in Stanford. Mm-hmm. It kind of came out of nowhere, but then they just knocked off a top 10 Florida team. So great to see at least one of our round ball teams knows how to beat Florida.
Out of the last 9.
Love it
that they beat Florida.
They are killing it. And I saw a heat chart of Issa Torres. She's hitting beach balls right now. I mean, she's hitting like 500 in the entire strike zone. It is unreal how good that girl is. And then obviously baseball swept Notre Dame.
Yep.
Good to see them get back on track after that tough series at Georgia Tech and coming off a loss to Florida, which, by the way, Florida just lost to Jacksonville again. That's the series in a midweek. I don't understand it.
I can't even with this Florida FSU baseball thing. It just,
it's crazy. Now they go out to Stanford. So hopefully Stanford seems to have our number in every other sport. So hopefully,
and you know, Link hates road trips. So
hopefully it's not in baseball too. But yeah, man, just quick shout out to the spring ball sports, because, you know, you got good recruiting and good things going for them. They're kind of toting the load for the fall sports right now.
Right.
But man, I'll tip my cap to anybody who's doing well. So, Michael, unless you have anything else, man, I think that's a good stopping point for this. Yep. Again, I know this one got a little bit long-winded, but you know how we do here at PTS. We're going to dig in. We're going to have the numbers and all that stuff. So we appreciate you guys watching. And if you enjoy episodes like this, make sure you go check out the last one and make sure you go ahead and drop a like and subscribe. Hit the notification bell so you never miss an episode. A lot of you guys might think you're subscribed and you're not. I think something like 40 to 50% of our views are actually subscribed. So, man, we're chasing that 3,000 number. Right. It would be really, really great if you guys could help push us over that. Because, again, this is as much about you guys as this is for us. Rate and review on the podcast also helps. Check out our website at plantthespear.com. We have written articles and everything over there for you guys. I'm going to be able to tell you about the cool features we have coming real soon. We're getting really, really close, so I can't wait to share that as well. But, Michael, man, that's going to be it for this one. We really, greatly appreciate everybody watching. And we'll catch you on the next one. As always,
go Noles.
Go Noles.